Welcome to the Late Lunch Leftovers, where in this podcast, Mike Cooley explains what it means to take a mindful seat, our cook shack visit involves scotch eggs and kitchen wizardry, some cyclists come in to talk about a cycling challenge, which turns into a Mr. and Mrs. Star quiz, and a chat about the best thing about bank holidays turns into the pros and cons of non-iron shirts. But first, Sean Connick gives an insight into the great work of the Manx Workshop for the Disabled and explains who Hawking the Penguin is.
He was part of a Christmas range we did over Christmas last year, where we made a different series of animals and a few mechanical toys, just to see what the market was like. And unfortunately, this chap received the damaged wing. So it was really looking bad for him. It was to the point where we were thinking about whether he's going to end up on a Dave's wood fire. You know.
No!
So we decided that he might be a good ambassador for the workshop and kind of make it a bit easier to have a more comfortable conversation about people and their different disablements. Just because it's easier to talk about a toy penguin than is to mention people by name.
He works so well because it's just, it's a beautiful piece, it's fun, and he's quite mischievous as well, isn't he? He gets up to all kinds of things.
Oh yeah, he's been up to loads of different things. So he occasionally likes to kind of crash bridge in a BMI-cree. He's met a few famous people. So
who has he met?
It's actually really kind of funny and also really highly embarrassing. So when the Red Hours came over, we at the workshop decided to make a special commemorative plaque for them as it was their 40th air display in the Isle of Man. So after arranging this, going into the Villa Marina, and he has to be in my bag all times, just in case. So we present the plaque, and squadron leader Adam Collins, he turns around and says, "Oh, really nice, but I was told there'd be a toy penguin somewhere." And it was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, no worries, let's get out." So there's a few pictures of me looking a little bit embarrassed, holding a toy penguin beside a red arrow.
I love how his reputation precedes him. He already knew about Hawking the Penguin, so he's famous already, all over the world by the sound of things.
Yeah, we've had a few different messages from people as far afield as Australia, kind of just asking about him, kind of like, you know, seeing if he's for sale, which he's not, thankfully. He's been out as well, like with different school children, so he's been up to the Manx Speaking School. He's been out with the Henry Bloom Noble Summer School Club, taking him on a few ventures. So he really enjoys going out and about and meeting people in the community, because at the end of the day, he's an ambassador for the workshop. The more he's out, the more people actually look and kind of spare us a 10-second thought. He's doing his job, and we can justify paying him in sardines and, you know, wherever he wants.
And with the kids as well, I'm guessing it does spark conversation, like you said, and so they might start asking pertinent questions and they might actually genuinely learn something.
Yeah, definitely. Because children are, their minds are kind of like clay, it's very easy to mould. But when you come to an adult and your mind's hardened, it's very easy kind of not to be able to do anything. So being out with him and, you know, someone's asked a pertinent question about either why he has this prosthetic arm or what's happened to him, it's very important to stress that just because he may be a little bit damaged doesn't mean that his self-worth is any less than if he had both his natural wings.
The Late Lunch Charity of the Week.
The initial aim was basically to act like a daycare for the mentally and physically disabled. But now the charity has changed over time to more of a rehabilitation program where we can hopefully get people with disabilities, whether physical or mental, back on the track to either lasting employment or just feeling a little bit better in themselves. We kind of take people in from the job centre or people who found us and just want to volunteer. So initially we do an assessment to find out what kind of work would best suit them, whether that be an office environment, woodworking or on the lasers or a bit of metal engraving. Because we have to work around people's disability to make sure that we put them in the right environment, which is nurturing, and they get the most out of it. So effectively, we teach them skills which may not initially seem applicable to a job, but it gets them going again. It's to make them learn more and realize that they're actually kind of more than just their disablement, that they can achieve more.
Tell us about your team.
I work with quite a close team. So there's my manager, Bernard, who's a lovely South African gentleman. I work with Kimmy, who's the office manager, and her dog. All visitors must be approved by the dog. A very, very important thing. No cat people. Then we have the two Daves across the road who take care of the lasers and the engraving side. And we have a really skilled bunch of woodworkers who build basically anything that comes across our way. So they did a fantastic job on the Dunneen bench at the grandstand, which we're very, very proud of.
Who is the charity for?
The charity is for anyone who has a disablement in their life which has affected them So we've had people who've came in with chronic pain, like myself, who've not been able to do anything really fulfilling in 4 or 5 years. We've had people in who've not been doing much for 10 years. So effectively, the charity's for people who've had something in their life which has stopped them being able to fulfill their true potential. And we kind of gently nurture them to get them going again. We're not miracle workers, but we do hopefully get people through the door and they kind of come out of it feeling a little bit better about their kind of situation in life. We do make benches and we do, you know, engraving and other stuff, but our product is people. Everything else is just kind of a nice bonus.
What are your main goals?
Our goals are so varied in terms of when we might have someone who comes in who has had a really bad accident in their bike and they're just there to kind of adjust their new self, but they're relatively fine and within 6 months of being with us they're back in full-time employment. So we definitely consider that a success. But then we might have someone who might come in and due to different reasons they may never be able to go back into full-time ordinary employment, but them being at the workshop and kind of feeling they're contributing and having a bit of meaning in their life, that in itself is a success. So it really depends on person to person, you know, but our main goal is that people who come into the workshop, they leave the workshop feeling a bit happier. And just in themselves, it's not about, I've made a bench today. It's more about stepping out the door whenever you leave going, yeah, you know what, I actually feel good about my situation.
The Late Lunch Charity of the Week.
Beth, it's all go in the cook shack. Actually, I say all go. It's all gone in the cook shack,
well,
practically.
It's nearly all gone.
It's nearly all gone.
Georgie made the error, I think, of saying, why don't you just try a bit? Oh my goodness, these Scotch eggs.
Oh, they're so tasty.
If you're sitting at home thinking Scotch egg is a sort of thing you pick up in a little supermarket, you know, you have as a party platter, think again.
No.
These are incredible and actually super easy to make because even I managed to kind of do it.
I'm now going to try and make a vegetarian Scotch egg on it. So just remind us what is in this mixture,
so
Georgie.
In this mixture, we've got some crushed chickpeas, garbanzo beans, whatever you call them. I call them chickpeas. We've got grated carrots. We've got a little bit of red pepper. We've got some onion, a little bit of garlic, loads of herbs. And then what we're going to do is we've sort of cooked that down. And we've crushed it, okay? Then you're going to put some of that on a bit of cling film. You're going to roll the egg in the flour. You're going to put the egg in the middle of the mixture, flatten it all down, and then bring it round, just like Beth did with the amazing one she did for the meat, which I'm just about to cook now on the Essie.
So you just use that pre-prepared mixture, Christy, just like I did, see how you get on. But while Christy's doing that, I want to find out about this machine that I'm standing next to now, because this I described at the start of the show, Heidi Danaher, as a bit of a kitchen whiz technology. It's called a Thermomix. Mm-hmm. What does it do?
Well, it's like an extra pair of hands in the kitchen. So it can do lots of different functions, replaces different 12 different appliances. So it can blend. It's like a super blender that can also cook as well. And it can knead dough. It can emulsify sauces. It can grind, grate, and do all sorts of manual things for you to have an easier life in the kitchen.
And the interesting thing is that this machine was established in the 1960s, which is really when the sort of evolution of home help really started.
Yes. So it's been around since then, although I didn't hear about it till about 8 years ago when my friend had one in Australia. And she said, oh, Heidi, you'll need one of these. And so she was cooking in the internal basket, she was cooking rice. And then on the next layer, she had vegetables. And on the top layer, she was cooking salmon with a tikka paste that she'd made herself. And I thought, oh, my goodness, that's amazing. She said, it's all done in 15 minutes whilst I'm talking to you.
Okay, that sounds almost too good to be true. Can I have a quick look inside it? Is it doing something at the moment?
Well, at the moment we've got some herbs in that we're just going to chop up. So we're going to do 5 seconds. So actually it does, you can have pre-programmed recipes. And there's a whole host. There's over 40,000 recipes that you can access online. Or you can actually do the manual settings, time, temperature, speed. Or there's actually all the other settings, such as the scales, because it can weigh things as well. Cleaning function, sous vide, fermentation, and dough function and slow cooker. So
I'm sure I'd find sous vide very useful.
I've not tried it yet. It's one of the new functions, as well as the high temperature cooking. But yeah.
I've no idea what it means. I'm going to be completely honest. Okay, right, let's blend this then. What do I need to do?
So 5 seconds, and then we're going to turn the dial to speed 5. So you turn it once and it closes the lid.
Okay.
And then up to speed 5.
Plays a nice little tune when it's done. I love that. Okay.
Oh, you are.
So let's have a look inside now. Oh my gosh, it is all chopped.
It's all chopped.
Almost as quick as I could have done that.
Almost. So I think that's one of the favourite functions I like about the Thermomix is that you can chop onions in 5 seconds, and it saves tears and it saves lots of time.
And that's the crucial thing nowadays, because people really are time pressured, and the idea of pretty much being able to whack a load of ingredients in and it do most of the work for you is very appealing.
You can plan all your recipes on your phone, and I think the only thing it doesn't do is actually buy the ingredients for you. So you can plan the recipes, you can make a weekly planner, and then you can follow step-by-step guidance on screen. It tells you, put in the onions, then sauté the onions, then add in the sauce, you know, all the different spices and things, and it can do it all for you. So you
How
can make a
amazing.
Curry quicker than you could get a takeaway.
That is brilliant. And if you want to see one of these, you can see them at the food festival, which is coming up next month. Heidi, thank you very much. I just want to see how Christy got on.
Well, Ben, I made a thing.
You did?
Yeah. I did. I've got to dip it in the egg and then put it in the panko breadcrumbs. But come and see how yours are getting on. Listen to that. Listen to that sizzle.
They are perfect. Now, you see this one. This was the one that you did, which is excellent. But because we haven't put it in the fridge for it to firm up, you see there's just a slight little crack at the top there, which is no big. You can see the egg just through there. These are fine because they went into the fridge.
And so that's normally what you do. You put them in the fridge to rest a while.
Just, yes, to rest a while. You could put them in the fridge the day before and leave them overnight and then fry them the next day. Yeah.
And what kind of oil is that?
So this is just vegetable oil, and most vegetable oil nowadays is rapeseed oil. Mm-hmm. And it's at, as I say, 160 degrees, just perfect. I've got a little candy thermometer here that works well. And these are going to be absolutely divine. Look at them. Look. Look,
and
golden.
Ideally,
I'm going to take these out now.
What would you serve them with?
Oh, piccalilli. All sorts of delicious vegetables. So at the weekend I blanched some sugar snap peas and some green beans and asparagus, and I made a little Asian dressing to go over them. Put a few flecks of a red pepper in just to bring out, you know, a different color into all the green. By blanching vegetables as well, it keeps their color, because they blanch, you just boil them for a minute and then plunge them into really cold iced water, and then they retain their beautiful greenness.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
I thought maybe this week and next week and the following weeks, because the kids are obviously going back to school, it's a time of transition, often anxiety, excitement, some worry. We'll concentrate on some practices for kids, or rather for parents to play with and use with their children. So, yeah, this is a practice I discovered from a Harvard doctor. I think his name is Dr. Christopher Willard. And it's great. And I've been using it all week with our 6-year-old. So we're basically encouraging our children to take a mindful seat. So SEAT. So that's an acronym for S, sensations, E, emotions, A, actions, and T, thoughts. So you can play this at the dinner table or in the car, just to kind of get, you know, your children used to becoming a bit more self-aware. So we start with S by asking them, what kind of sensations are you feeling right now? Hot, cold, fizzy, tingly, whatever, you know, they will tell you. E, emotions, what kind of emotions are happening in your body right now? Happy, sad, angry, grumpy. A, actions, what kind of urges or impulses are happening in the body? You know, what do you want to do? Do you want to run, scream, shout, climb, hide? And then finally, T, what kind of thoughts are happening in your head right now? So I've been using this with our little boy, Leo. And for him, it's a great game just to have a look and to go, okay, I'm thinking about my Lego magazine, or something like that. It's also a great practice to do when there's something, you know, coming, something building up, some anxiety, some worry, just to help them get some distance on the emotion. And if you can, more with practice, if you can kind of use it whilst the child is angry or having a tantrum or in kind of some kind of destructive behavior, it can really help to kind of deflate that overwhelming emotion.
And the key to this, I'm guessing, is as the adult who's asking the questions is to be completely non-judgmental. There are no right or wrong answers.
Exactly. Yeah. How can there be? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Yeah. It's just an exploration. That's what kind of makes it into a game. And it's often just fun. It just tunes the child into what's actually present in their mind and their body without any judgment. And of course, if they're feeling angry or grumpy or sad, it just helps them understand it and unpack it and share it. But it's good for parents to do too. I mean, it's not just for children. I mean, we play this around the dinner table and it's just fun to find out what's happening in you, what's happening in me. So there's more literacy, more of an understanding and a kind of conversation around thoughts and feelings and emotions.
And again, you practice it in a time where there aren't extreme emotions going on, then it'll be easier to access when things are going awry somewhat.
That's it, yeah. So then it's not like a punishment, like we only do this when you're angry. What are you feeling? It's also to, as I say, to tune them into their present moment experience as and when.
Mm. And I think it's also, again, it's not something I would have done or did do as a child, but I think it's great to get people, young people, thinking that way at an early age where you're sort of turning your thoughts inwards and thinking about yourself. You know, I used to get terrible tantrums and sort of lose it. And then you're not really sort of with it, are you? And if you can actually sort of stop and someone stops you and say, all right, just try and identify some of these thoughts going on. It's like anything, it's taking a step back and looking within yourself, isn't it? Which is not necessarily an easy thing to do when you're younger.
That's it. One neuroscientist talks about when you use practices like this, you're using your upstairs brain to look down on your downstairs brain. And when you're in a tantrum or something like that, you're just in your downstairs brain, your limbic system, fight or flight. So the shift to go to your, inverted commas, upstairs brain, reflective, self-aware, is a shift that often impacts on the behaviour. It cuts down the behaviour.
And I suppose it's just a great thing to get used to doing, because hopefully that'll be a skill that you take forward to adulthood and be able to distance yourself from your thoughts, you know, whether it's fear, anger, whatever it is. If you learn it at such an early age, then it's kind of with you for life.
It's with you for life. It's just that basic awareness that I can kind of step back from the feeling. I can step back from the thought, which is, it sounds so simple and kind of irrelevant, but it's a very important life skill that many of us still don't have as adults.
Are children more receptive, do you think, to these sort of concepts of mindfulness because they've got no preconceptions about it, whereas some adults might be, you know, might be slightly, you know, you can be cynical and have already sort of impressions already and be slightly rejecting of these ideas when you first introduced to them?
Yeah, they basically, you know, they live more in the present moment than we do. They're less consumed by thoughts than we do. But if I say, right, I'm going to teach you mindfulness, then that will kill it, because who wants to be taught anything? But if we play a game, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? And of course, this is just one of thousands of, you know, different kinds of mindfulness practices you can use with kids. There's so many. You can make your own. That's the kind of joy of them. You can create your own. But they all just raise the self-awareness of children.
Do you know, any parent who has had to go through a child having an absolute tantrum in a public place would love to have some way of disarming that. Mm. I'm not sure whether this would work, and maybe they just scream out exactly what they thought of you when you ask them those questions. But just as a parent, I suppose, when your initial reaction is anger, it can also help you to distance yourself from that as well if you go through this process.
Yeah, and it also links back to what we did last week, the name it to tame it practice. So by verbalizing it, so by your child saying, I feel angry. The other day I asked our little boy, and what's happening in your body? He said there was a kind of crazy, my body feels crazy. That's such a great description, crazy. So it just that verbalization of it, again, that shifting into your upstairs brain and looking down on the downstairs brain. So there's that separation just by talking about it or naming it.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
This is Late Lunch here on Manx Radio with Beth and Howard. And we are joined in the studio by Dave Hogg, Matt Hills and Sam Brand. We're talking about the cycling challenge that Dave and Matt are setting off for in about 3 weeks, isn't it? So the countdown is well and truly on. But because you are sharing a room for 9 days. We do want to make sure that you know each other as well as possible. Is it making you slightly uncomfortable, yeah, that thought? Yeah. Okay, it's
in
all
fact,
right.
A fun fact for you, the last person I shared a room with was your husband in 1989 when we were at the Mackle Adventure Centre as teenagers. So
oh,
there you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That, yeah.
Gosh. All right. You sleep alone, do you? we won't go into that.
We're in bunk beds.
Okay. Sam Brand, from a pro cyclist point of view, just how important is it to get on with your roommate?
Oh, it's massive. You know, you share probably with a different person each time. Some people tend to share with the same people. Team to team, it can differentiate. But, you know, I love all my teammates. But, you know, if you get on with them and the chemistry is there, you mean you can be in each other's company without having to think too much, then it makes the whole tour that much better. You know, it's like sharing with your best mate. You know, if you can sit in silence, even better. Sometimes there's a bit of you know, friction, but okay. I'm sure you'll be fine.
It'll be fine. Don't worry, boys. Don't worry. Okay, so question master Howard.
Oh, right.
First question.
That'd be Derek Beatty. First question. Does he prefer tea or coffee first thing?
Okay, so I've got both of your answers here. In fact, actually, I'm going to give you your answers to read out, actually. So there's your answers, Matt and Dave. So, Dave, what was your answer about Matt to that question?
Oh, I think he's a coffee man.
Is he right?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
And what about you, Matt?
What? Coffee with two exclamation marks.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Times four, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, as cyclists, you can't have anything else. I think it...
It's got to be coffee.
It'd be a non-starter if Ivory said tea. So
okay,
yeah, it's a good start.
A nice
good
start. Tea doesn't cut the mustard. Around it, no.
Good start. Okay, next question.
Question two: does he snore or talk in his sleep?
Dave, does Matt snore or talk in his sleep?
I've gone for talk.
All right. Well, I blame my wife for it, but I think I snore quite heavily.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Okay. What did you say about Dave?
Interestingly, I put talk as well.
No, I think Ruth would say I'm a snorer.
Okay. Two snorers, but maybe they'll cancel each other out.
Well, I think you're right. If you've got the two snorings going at once, it might just end up with nothing. Well,
kind of white noise.
Yeah. Pack some of those plasters, eh? Yeah, put that on your wrist.
Okay.
Next question.
Question three. What would he say is his most annoying habit?
Okay, Dave, what is Matt's most annoying habit, would you say?
I would say continually eating and rustling in the bag.
I go with that because I am continually eating, yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't quite sure, so I put cleanliness.
Oh, gosh.
Is that an annoying habit that you have, Dave? Is that...
What, me?
Yeah, I went around your house and it's spotless.
Oh, right, okay. Sorry, I thought you meant my cleanliness. I was getting a little worried there. I would say my habit would be I probably chatterbox, talk too much.
But not in his sleep, so that's okay.
Well, yeah, that's
You're
going to
be fine.
Yeah.
Next question.
A technical one next. Does he put his socks or pants on first?
Oh, I would say Matt's definitely a pants guy.
Yeah. And I put pants because I said who would put socks on first, quite frankly.
But here's the thing, and I don't know if this is true or not, okay? Is it true that if you are riding properly and you've got your lycra on, you shouldn't wear pants at all? Sam, is that true?
That's correct. Yeah, no, pants are a no-go. You need a cycle shirt.
For the webcam, Matt's doing a demonstration now.
He's
in his lycra.
I am in my lycra.
Okay. And I don't want to ask. Okay, and then we on to the final question.
Final question. Which celebrity does he think he looks like?
Okay, Matt, which celebrity does Dave think he looks like?
I think he looks like Spanish footballer Iniesta.
Yeah, everybody tells me that. Even when we were on holiday, the kids were taking picture of me next to his picture. So, outside a bank, of all places.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you just pretend you were, or what?
I did try, but no one was having it.
Okay, and Dave, finally, who does Matt think he looks like?
I think Matt fancies himself as a bit of a Jason Statham.
I'll go with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Was there anybody else?
No.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, win that. Yeah.
Okay, so I think you've done fairly well.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
We haven't caused any arguments, so a good basis for the 9 days.
I'll message you while we're away and, you know, we'll have a little code if it's not going well.
Okay,
if you've had any sleep from the snoring.
Well, we do wish you the very, very best of luck. If people would like to support you in this, it is all for the Children's Centre. I know you're trying to raise around £3,000. Where can they find your Just Giving page?
Yeah, so if you just go on Just Giving and type A on Isle of Man or IOM, and you'll see myself, Matt, and our colleague Nick Watterson, who's also doing it.
Fantastic. And Sam, just finally, any top tips for the boys?
Look after each other. You know, when we're in tours, it's nice to... Sometimes it's not always going like great, but if you can get on with each other, it makes it a lot better. And even if a nice pick me up or something, you know, it's always take the cake is what I would say. Yeah, always.
Well, I think
always.
Matt will be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are all our late lunch leftovers for this week. Do tune in for the main helping on Manx Radio weekdays just after 2 p.m.
Every week, of course, we'll have our regular features with Duxford Diaries. We'll have Mark Tiley's Greatest Hit, Midweek Mindfulness, and plenty more with our monthly guests as well.
But for now, thank you so much for listening to the Late Lunch Leftovers podcast. We'll see you again next time.